Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 312th edition of the Feuersteins Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at Once the Metro on the Red Bulls and every single other website on soccer through SB Nation Family. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer to the best of my abilities. Now, as you probably have read this morning or this afternoon through CONCACAF, there has been changes officially now coming from CONCACAF in their offices in Miami. CONCACAF right now officially has changed their Champions League format, and it's really interesting to see what they have done and how everything is going to shape up. Now, once again, there are some good and there are probably some bad. But what does that mean for the clubs coming from Major League Soccer as well as those clubs from Liga MX? Well, apparently, this is going to be a twofold type of tournament. And it's very interesting to see what's going to happen here. Because right now, phase one of this new tournament will have... Well, let's just... Before I even say that, there is going to be a total of 31 teams participating in two phases of this tournament. Now, obviously, phase one is going to be involving clubs mostly from the Caribbean and from Central America. One of those is going to be basically two teams from each country of the Central American zone, the UNCAF zone. So you're going to get two Costa Rican sides, two Salvadorian sides, two Guatemalan sides, two Honduran sides, two Nicaragua sides, and two Panamanian sides. Three teams from the Caribbean zone, basically from the Caribbean Club Championship, and one team from Belize. That will be the 16 participating clubs, 13 Central American teams, and four Caribbean, 13 Central American teams and three teams from the Caribbean. The champion qualifies to the Champions League. And that will be phase two. So then when you head over and phase two begins in the new year, it will be the phase one champion, the one Canadian Cup champion, the Caribbean Club Championship winner. Oh, one second. Pardon me. Sorry about that. Five Central American teams from Costa Rica, one from Costa Rica, one from Panama, one from Honduras, one from Guatemala, and one from El Salvador. Overall champions of Apertura and Clausura. The four clubs from Liga MX, the champion and runner-ups of both Apertura and Clausura seasons, and of course, the MLS Cup champion, the U.S. Open Cup champion, the Supporter Shield champion, and the other winner of the other conference in the regular season advances, waiting for this second phase, all from CONCACAF. Now, apparently, the group stages are eliminated. The group stages are eliminated, and that means of one thing and one thing only. Everything will be goal aggregate. We are going to have basically through CONCACAF, if you do watch not just the Copa Libertadores, but also the Copa Sudamericana, which is all goal aggregate matches. Everything is goal aggregate through the Copa Sudamericana. Now, like I said, there are some good things here and there are some bad things here with this new format. Basically, we're not going to see anything with the CONCACAF Champions League this summer through the fall for MLS teams being in the group stage. So that has been eliminated. So what we're going to see, basically, are matches involving all the teams that qualified from Major League Soccer, the Canadian Championship, and the clubs that are finishing up Liga MX in the Apertura and Clausura seasons, all of them will be in this second phase. And while I think it's an interesting idea, the truth of the matter is that if you really wanted to eliminate, if you truly wanted to eliminate, you know, the fixture congestion, in all honesty, I think they should have kept the group stage and made it at the beginning and then do the knockouts towards, you know, in the springtime, spring and summertime, around the springtime, I should say, do it group stage first and then the knockout in the fall. And I think that probably worked out with everyone. Now, there are some positives. Now, we all know that the idea is to make sure that we have these knockout stages are fun and entertaining and exciting to watch. But once again, the truth of the matter is that not everyone is going to be overjoyed with how this CONCACAF Champions League is going to be structured. And until we see a situation where, and I understand where, you know, CONCACAF is trying to get to. They're trying to make it bigger and better. They're trying to make sure that we're going to get solid matchups in this Champions League. I don't know. I just think like, I just really feel like maybe it's not enough. Maybe it's not enough how this new setup is. Maybe it needs more work. Maybe it needs more tuning up. But all I know is this. The current edition of the 2016-17 CONCACAF Champions League will be finishing up starting next month at the end of February until we get to the finals, the two-legged finals, at the end of April. Someone is going to the FIFA Club World Cup this coming December. Who that club will be representing this confederation, that's what we're going to find out. But once again, seeing how everything is being done, seeing how everything is being taken care of, how it's going to work, what will work, we don't know. We're going to find out. We're going to find out about the pots of who is going to be drawn. We're just going to have to find out. We're going to have to see what the whole thing is going to be done and how it's going to be made out of. And obviously, it means that there's going to be three teams in each country of the UNCAF zone, an additional spot for the Caribbean CFU zone, the Caribbean zone for the Caribbean Cup. Canada just remains with a one spot, four for Liga MX, four for the United States. We're just going to have to be patient and see if this whole thing does make sense. Because if it does make sense, if it does work, then I'd say leave it as is with this new format. If it doesn't work, if it truly doesn't work, then I guess we're going to have to go with what – now, I'm not saying it has to be UEFA, but at least you have to say what is going to have to happen is, simply put, maybe we're just going to have to do maybe 8 groups of 4. Maybe that's the way to do things and have regular matches, regular group, bring back the group stage. There are so many questions right now with this situation. So many questions. And at the moment, you have UANL and Club America representing Mexico in the Apertura. Clausura will be done later on. Seattle Sounders wins the MLS Cup. FC Dallas wins both the Sports Shield and the U.S. Open Cup, which means the Colorado Rapids are next in line to win the Supporter Shield as runners-up. New York Red Bulls winning the Eastern Conference. Of course, Toronto FC, the Canadian Championship 2016. Deportivo Saprissa at the moment represents Costa Rica, Motagua for Honduras, Antigua for Guatemala, Arabe Unido for Panama, Santa Tecla for El Salvador, Real Esteli for Nicaragua. And now we're just going to have to wait and see who is going to be the one to just pull off an upset, shall we say. But until that happens, and when we see this whole thing in action, then we will find out what would work, what won't work, where do we think that needs to be some tuning in, some, I shouldn't say tuning in, but like fine tuning, what needs to be fixed up. But if I can just say this at the moment, at least let's give CONCACAF some credit with the new president of CONCACAF, Montagliani. At least he wants to fix the situation. He feels it had to be fixed. He feels it had to be done. And all I can say is that at least we got to give him the credit that he deserves. He's trying to fix the Confederation, and he's trying to fix things that is going to make it work. And I really do hope that it does work. I really do hope it does work. And move forward, and let's have some fun. It's all you can really say, to be honest with you. Because we need to see what is going to work and what is not going to work inside CONCACAF with this new version of the Champions League. The old way is going to be gone once we get the quarterfinals underway in the end of February, and then we'll see what happens when we go. But my only complaint in this particular point in time is everything is goal aggregate. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be fun. I'm not saying it shouldn't be exciting. But once again, there is an issue when you have goal aggregate matches dominating this tournament. I mean, if it works for the Copa Sudamericana in CONMEBOL, fine. All I'm saying is this. All I'm saying is that we need a group stage at least. You know, I feel like we need a group stage. But that's just me. This is how I feel. But we'll see what the situations are going to be about when we get to them. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a great show for you tonight. Of course, joining me later on tonight, Matthew Klimberg will join me discussing the whole Dax McCarty situation with the New York Red Bulls. Recorded interview with Daryl Jones over in Jacksonville about the situation with the Jacksonville Armada in the NASL. Robert Hay will be joining me to discuss about the final season of RFK Stadium in Major League Soccer. But joining me right now, who writes for ChicagoNow.com, the Fire Chicago Fire confidential reporter himself, Guillermo Rivera. Guillermo, welcome back. It's been a while, and how are you over there in the Windy City?
Excellent, Dan. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for coming back on, and welcome back. Are you as surprised as probably I am, and maybe many others from outside and inside Chicago, that the Fire with Nelson Rodriguez and, of course, your head coach, Veljko Panovic, the moves that they made in this offseason to bring in high-quality players to fix this issue the Chicago Fire has had for a very long time?
Am I surprised at the boldness? No. I think we've been saying for the better part of the last 6 months that if they weren't going to be active last summer, that this coming January window is going to be very important for them. I think everybody was surprised by the Dax McCarty move, but I am not surprised by the boldness and the quality of the moves, because they knew they had to be active. They knew they had to bring in quality players. I mean, that's what makes teams go, and they were short on that last year.
Yeah, they really were. I mean, there were so many. I mean, you have good players, obviously. Let's not, you know, pretend you don't have good players. You have DeLuyu there. You have Akam there. But, you know, maybe game changers were missing from the Chicago roster from last year and years past.
Yeah, the game changers have been missing for a good portion of the last 6 or 7 years. You just mentioned a couple of guys who are pretty good players, and Michael DeLuyu and David Akam. Akam has been kind of in and out with various injuries or national team call-ups. DeLuyu just got there at midseason last year, and he looked pretty good in what we saw of him since July. So there are still positions that need to be filled. They needed to address central midfield. There was a lot of talk about Bastian Schweinsteiger and the pursuit of him via Manchester United. But I think if you look at what Juninho and Dax McCarty could potentially do, it fills a big need in central midfield that they just didn't have last year. Matt Polster, as a young player, has his ups and downs in that central midfield position, but they struggled to keep the ball. They struggled to find a link between the back line, midfield, and the forwards. Through central midfield, they were dominated in possession. They were dominated really through the middle of the field for the most part last year and the year before. So I think that's something they need to address. They addressed it with probably two of the best holding midfielders in MLS over the last several years. I think the concern now is, are they too similar, and how do you play these guys?
Oh, yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? I mean, you've got Juninho, who's had his many, many years with the LA Galaxy under Bruce Arena. And, of course, you know, we all know Dax McCarty very well, not just with the Red Bulls, but also down in Dallas when he was playing for when they were known as the Burn. I mean, you got two guys that are probably doing the same thing, but, you know, one's on the right side, the other one's on the left side in the midfield. I mean, it all depends on who's going to be bringing the ball up along with the attackers and who's going to stay behind with the back line.
Yeah, and I think that's the kind of a piece they still need to figure out, and they need to figure out who is going to be the sort of brains of the attack once the ball is won back in central midfield. I think right now they've got Michael DeLuyu kind of playing as an underneath forward, or at least it's the intention, playing as an underneath forward behind Nemanja Nikolic, who should be a solid acquisition as well. I think they still have to address what happens on the right side, whether it's Arturo Alvarez, who had a decent year as an MLS veteran last year and kind of, and not to be offensive, but he had piled up a lot of numbers in garbage time. They've got Luis Solignac, who's capable of playing out there, so like John Goosen. So they've got some pieces. I'm just not sure that they've got them all there yet.
I mean, look, Arturo Alvarez, who showed a lot of promise a long time ago for the Earthquakes. I mean, I don't know how he's doing now, obviously, as you said, a lot of garbage time, unfortunately. Maybe, who knows, maybe it was injury, maybe he doesn't listen to the coach very well. I don't know. You know more about that than I do. I don't want to speculate, but You know, I've always thought Arturo Alvarez was always a top-notch attacker and at least had some guile and savvy. I don't know these days recently, but we'll see what happens here with everything that's been going on. When you talk to Nelson Rodriguez, obviously, we've known him for such a long period of time in the front office of the league in Manhattan, in New York City, and not really got a chance. Of course, Chivas USA ended their existence, that only gave him probably just one season to do something. Since he came over last year, Nelson Rodriguez, what sense do you have from him that, well, we already know about the moves he's made, and so far it's been pretty good, but in your opinion, what type of man is Nelson Rodriguez that makes you believe that this is a guy probably could succeed as a better general, or, you know, succeed the history and the aura of Peter Wilt?
Well, he's very meticulous. He's very thoughtful and planned out. He's not a guy who's going to rush into a move just to make a move. And I think the fan base is getting, or has been, impatient, and I think he said time and again that there's not much he can say to kind of smooth any of that over, given the results over the last 6 or 7 years. But he's not going to rush into it. I don't think he wants to feel like he's pressured into making a move just for the sake of making a move. But at the same time, he's acknowledged that, hey, he's 52 years old, and this could be his last shot at filling that position if he doesn't make it work. So I think he's going to be careful with the guys he brings in. I know he's looking, he said over and over again, he's looking for character guys. You know, we just talked about Arturo Alvarez, who's a quality MLS veteran. But they've still got to address the back line. They don't have a lot of depth there. They need to find the sort of playmaker that's been lacking in Chicago for the better part of the last 5 years. They've got pieces to add. They have the money to add it, apparently. So I think the jury's still out. I think we'll see what he's able to accomplish probably in the summer window. I don't know that there are going to be any huge additions here in the January window. He's kind of alluded to nothing really being on the horizon as far as big moves coming in the immediate future. But I think you may see a transformative addition this summer sometime. Who that may be, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say this much. A lot of Chicago Fire fans went to O'Hare International to welcome Nemanja Nikolic, who's going to be your striker, designated player striker. The Serbians coming in over from Videotron over in Europe. And what surprised you about this move, and what made you think that the Chicago Fire is going to be dangerous on the attacking side of the ball?
Yeah, well, he was playing in Poland at Legia Warsaw, who has played in Champions League. He's played in some high-quality competitions. And I think if you look at some of the past Chicago Fire designated players, you may have to do a Google search, and I think you end up scratching your head looking at some of the additions. You look at Kennedy Iguananike coming in as a designated player, and you have to think of Gilberto, who a lot of people thought, including myself, would be a good addition who just didn't pan out. There's always a gamble when you bring in guys who aren't familiar with the league or are from outside of the MLS comfort zone. But it looks like Nikolic is going to be, or can be, a player who is one of the top strikers in the league. His strike rate over the course of his career has been phenomenal. He's still relatively young at 29 years old, and he's played in quality competition. So he's got the pedigree. I think it's going to come down to how often they get him the ball in dangerous areas, whether that's Michael DeLeu or David Akam feeding in behind them. But I think Nemanja Nikolic is a bit of a cut above the recent Fire DP additions in that he has a quality well above a couple of those guys that I just mentioned.
Hey, listen, the last true attacking player I remember the Fire having was Ante Razov. that's a long time ago. I mean, I can't help it. I have visions of Razov coming down the flank, and then as soon as he curls in, he just finds a way to go short side or goes for the back post, and he always converts. So past memories of what Ante Razov used to do, but hey, what are you going to do? As great additions, of course, seeing what the Nelson Rodriguez has done. Let me ask you, obviously, the goalkeeping situation. Sean Johnson is no longer with Chicago. He is with New York City FC. Were you surprised that Nelson decided to say goodbye to Sean Johnson? Because I was.
No, I think just being around the team here, I think most people realize that Sean Johnson needed a move, not just for the team, but I think for himself, he needed a new scenario, a change of scenery. I think it'll do him good to go to New York. It just wasn't working out for him here, and I don't know that there were actual run-ins with the coaching staff, but there just wasn't a meshing of what they'd like to see from each other. So I wasn't surprised at all. I was expecting the new Sam Johnson. I was more surprised that they went out and brought in a 35-year-old international goalkeeper. I thought they might go a little bit younger. I think the initial thought was to try to go after a Brad Guzan, who's going to be in Atlanta eventually. But, it was a little surprising that they would go out and add a 35-year-old international keeper to replace Johnson when it would appear that the American – goalkeeping situation, goalkeeper pool is at least deep enough to fill a roster in MLS.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel that maybe, or do they feel maybe the goalkeepers that they have currently with the club or in the academy, maybe they're not ready yet? Do they feel that they're not ready to make the move, whoever's in their academy right now, to the big stage of MLS?
Yeah, I don't think they've got anyone in the academy that they would see as a goalkeeper immediately. The goalkeepers right now are Bava, Matt Lampson, who is an MLS backup, to be fair, and possibly the rookie Cleveland that was drafted a couple of weeks ago. So there is a question at goalkeeper. I think they think they believe that Bava adds a little bit of quality in. Or a little bit of an upgrade in the style of play that they want to put forth on the field, and that he can play with his feet, he moves the ball well, and that's kind of what they were looking for, and they felt that Johnson didn't do that very well. So I think they went out and found the guy that they think will fit the way they want to play. It's just you have to wonder, is it 36-year-old South American journeyman goalkeeper? Just it's an unknown quantity, and we'll see.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. That's a very, very strange move from Nelson. But I guess if it's just for a year, then maybe it works. You never know. But overall, with all these additions that have been made, and of course the subtraction that happened in the net, how confident do you feel the Fire are going to have a productive year and maybe finally getting one of those playoff spots above that that so-called red line that they can finally get above?
Well, I think this team is better. There's no doubt that they're better than they were at the end of last year. I think the additions of Juninho and McCarty alone, two guys who are familiar with the league, have been successful in the league. Juninho's won championships with Los Angeles, and McCarty's played for supporters to winning New York Red Bull sides, and he's been a very integral part of what they did there. So I think they can't help but be better, and of course they can't get worse, but I think Nikolić is a good add. I'm still not convinced that this is a playoff team. They're still missing a couple of pieces. They need to get better defensively. They probably need some depth on the back line as well. That being said, I think they'll compete with this team. The Eastern Conference is still fairly wide open. You don't know what the Red Bulls are going to do with their budget space and roster space. So I think the East is going to be competitive again. It may not be good competitive at the bottom, but I think the Fire will at least be in the mix for those last couple of playoff spots with the other teams out there.
All right, last question, and it's a serious question, because I need to know about yourself right here. And I have to ask you about this past October. Cubs or White Sox?
Oh, that's a no-brainer, Cubs. I've been a Cubs fan since I was I was 5 years old, so that's an easy one. I'll tell you what, I don't even acknowledge 2005. That's how much of a Cub fan I am.
Well, you know, I had to ask because I want to make sure that I can say this. How were you sleeping after that last out?
Well, you get to that seventh game of the World Series, and you go into extra innings, and you blow a lead late in the game, and you kind of feel like, oh, here we go again. But, you know, at some point, it had to stop, and I'm glad it finally did. It was a surreal feeling, and it still hasn't really sunk in, to be honest with you.
Yep. Well, you don't have to say it anymore. Wait till next year because it finally happened. Guillermo,
thank you
very much for your time. It's over. Congratulations with the Cubs. But I just want to say thanks again for coming on tonight. And good luck during the preseason covering the Fire. And, of course, we'll see what they do 2017. Hope to catch you again next time. Thank you very much.
Yeah, anytime, Dan.
No problem. Guillermo Rivera from ChicagoNow.com. Of course, he's the Fire confidential man. They want to know everything Chicago Fire news and all that good stuff. Joining me right now is my good friend and my colleague, Robert Hay, as DC United, for the final time in their history since coming into the league in 1996, or being one of the charter members of Major League Soccer, the final year of Robert F. Kennedy RFK Stadium will be this year. And finally, they will move into a brand new stadium sometime in 2018. Robert, thank you for having the time to come back on. And how are you, sir?
Yeah, excuse me. It's always a pleasure. Happy to be on and happy to talk about a topic that's near and dear to my heart. So looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. And, of course, we'll get to a lot of other RFK stuff when we get to the end of 2017, because obviously the final game of the DC United schedule, amazingly enough, decision day, as the New York Red Bulls will be finishing off the regular season down at RFK, and we'll see how the ending will be played in the end of October.
Well, I think we were talking about this. I think it's the end of the regular season, the last regular season game at RFK, because I think we fully expect that DC United, of course, will be hosting a couple of home playoff games, I would assume. So, but it's the last definite scheduled game at RFK in history. So it'll be a bittersweet game, no doubt about that. I think, you know, DC United being an original MLS team and having played at RFK the entire time, it's the last tenant to call RFK home. So it'll be closing out the stadium and for all intents and purposes as a regular sporting venue. And so I think from not only just a soccer perspective, but from a DC history, DC sports history perspective, it's going to be a pretty important game. And I'm curious to see what they do to close the place out. Hopefully they won't. You'll wait until the last person goes and the last raccoon is out before they hit the implosion button. But you know, in all seriousness, it's a place full of a lot of memories, a lot of good memories, and a lot of, you know, not so great memories. Not just for DC United, but for a lot of the sports teams in this area.
Now, you know, RFK is basically the same mold and model of what was at the time, you know, two-sport stadiums. Obviously, Pittsburgh with Three Rivers, the Vet in Philadelphia, Busch Stadium in St. Louis. Even the old King Dome was the same thing in Seattle. I mean, RFK Stadium was built to hold and host not just the NFL's Washington Redskins, but at the time – the old Washington Nationals, or the second version of the Washington – I shouldn't say the Nationals, excuse me, the Washington Senators, the original Washington D.C. baseball team. And then, of course, when the Montreal Expos moved out of Canada to become the Washington Nationals, they played a couple of seasons at RFK while National Stadium was being built.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, for the longest time, I mean, the Senators played there, of course, for a long time. But those Senators teams were, Actually, I don't think RFK has ever seen good baseball. It's seen some really good soccer and some really good football, but I don't think it ever saw good baseball. It saw some legends come through, Ted Williams and the like. But, you know, one of my greatest RFK memories, maybe my greatest, I know this is a soccer show, but, you know, to see D.C. come back to Washington when the Nationals played their first home game at RFK against the Diamondbacks was a true memory for me. But, you know, if you go back through RFK's history, you have the D.C. United memories, of course, the MLS Cups that were won there and the major playoff, either playoff games or intense regular season games that were there. And then, of course, Redskins playoff games and the stands shaking. But also, it was a venue for U.S. soccer. For U.S. soccer, it was a major location for U.S. men's national team and women's national team. In fact, the women's national team will be playing there in a little less than 2 months for the tournament that they're hosting. For other sporting events, for bands, there's a number of concerts that I've seen there over the years. It was an original two sport venue, the kind that was built up in the 60s, and it just hung around. For a number of reasons, it just existed and stayed around and was used. It was part of the city and became used for a number of different things and never went away. It wasn't one of those things where somebody, a team or an owner decided it needed to be rebuilt or renovated and made, renewable for the new stadium era. And it wasn't just immediately torn down. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's built on land that's partially federal, and there wasn't that one team after the Redskins left that really called it home. There were teams that called it home, but the city owns the stadium, and it was a complicated situation. So it was kind of a stadium that's lived in limbo for a long time, and finally the lack of tenants is what's really driving it out. And so unlike a Three Rivers or something like that, where modernity required it to go out of existence, in reality, they had no other choice but to go out of existence, and that's why it's leaving us after this year. So, from a personal perspective, for me, it has a lot of memories. I mentioned the Nationals, I mentioned D.C. United, and taking my kids to see D.C. United games. I saw high school football games, my high school football team play there. I saw, concerts there, my first concert there, and baseball and football and all kinds of things. So if you're a DC sports person, it's a milestone. You've probably seen something there that you have fond memories of.
Oh yeah. I mean, I can say this though. I went to my first national team game there. It was during the qualifying cycle to get to South Korea and Japan for 2002. Sadly though, it was a poor idea by Bruce Arena to just have, I guess, what is it, the lower bowl filled with U.S. fans and then the upper bowl filled with, I believe it was either, I think it was Honduran fans. And it didn't work out that well because, all the Hondurans found a way to get tickets pretending to be Americans. So that was the one drawback, I think, and it was a bad loss, unfortunately. But RFK Stadium is a part of the threshold in this country, part of the history through MLS. And while, we've always talked about, well, when is that new stadium going to come? When is that new stadium going to be brought in? When is DC United, one of the charter members of this league, when are they finally going to get that opportunity to have their own stadium and to finally – get out of RFK? Because let's be honest, I mean, it is so old, so dilapidated, especially the upper deck. And I know the biggest joke is the raccoons, but at the same time, there is a safety concern that RFK is going to crumble and fall down.
Yeah, I certainly worry about any time anybody has to walk up into that upper section. There's a reason why it's usually cordoned off, except for in case of necessity. I mean, it's in no way pretty, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that, it wasn't the team that owned the stadium. It's the city, and the sporting arm of the city, and there never was that agreement. As you know, DC United for the longest time, of course, has been looking for their own stadium, and there was never an impetus by the city to renovate and to, you know, say we'll keep you here, we'll renovate. It's just, if you don't see a need to renovate a stadium, you're not going to do it, and that's really what happened. Is, you know, there was just never that need, and so the stadium is continually just kind of falling apart. I mean, it's falling apart when I was in high school, and that wasn't that long ago, or that was a while ago, I should say. So this is just an inevitable decline of a stadium, and it's reached this point where it just really isn't. You just can't renovate; it's just got to go. And for a safety perspective, it is a good thing. I wonder, you know, when I buy a seat to the stadium, I wonder if my seat's going to be there or if it's going to be folded up and broken. But it's just lived past its expiration date.
Yeah, it really has. And, of course, once again, the final regular season game at RFK Stadium will be visited by the New York Red Bulls, of course, MetroStars, Red Bulls. It all got started back when the league opened up in 1996. That one afternoon at RFK, Robert, Giovanni Savarese, John Harkes, Jeff Agus, Tab Ramos, Roberto Donadoni, Marco Echeverri, Raul Diaz Arce, something brewed on that field that started this whole rivalry between our two sides, and it just never, mm-hmm. ever got dull with newer teams coming in. Or, shall I say, revamped shields and renamed teams.
Yes. Yeah, I think the fans no doubt have kept that passion alive, and that's a testament to, you know, the survival of MLS 1.0. You know, it's things like the Red Bull and DC United that have kept that original spirit from MLS alive. And there's that, some of the magical stuff. You know, you mentioned the players that have come through. It's funny, DC United just this week announced the signing of Ian Harkes, so there might be another Harkes that closes out RFK as there was one that opened it. There's just something, you know, when you move into a new stadium, obviously there's some nice things about it. There's some great amenities, but, you know, I think there will be something missed, you know, the stands rocking up and down, the fans being able to yell at each other across the field and sticking, you know, Red Bull fans before it was unsafe up into the upper deck away from everyone else and things like that. You know, stuff like that won't be there anymore. It'll be a more traditional soccer-specific stadium. But, hopefully with the new design, you know, seeing what they put out there, hopefully it retains some of the original elements that made RFK special, and it'll continue to be a special venue for DC United.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see what happens then. But once again, Robert, you know, we can just point chapter and verse about all the games that have been played there, regular season victories for both sides. And more recently, and it has to be said, the Red Bulls have had the advantage at RFK the last 2 years. But if you can say one thing about RFK Stadium, no matter how many seats are empty and no matter how many seats are filled, and I'm not trying to make a joke here, I'm being honest here, you would have to agree, though, that RFK Stadium is still a menacing place for a visiting side to come in, because it's still an old stadium. It still has its own nuance. It still has its own, shall I say, fear factor when you're coming in to play against DC United in that venue.
Yeah, you know, it might have more to do with the fact that the facilities are kind of outdated rather than more than anything. But no, I mean, it's the whole package. I mean, you walk in and you've got the old baseball, football locker rooms. You walk past the batting cage into the bowl, out into the stadium, and you know, you see, the fan supporting section especially when it's full, and even when it's not entirely full, even if it's only part full, it's still pretty loud and vociferous, you know, going at and yelling and cheering for the team. And then you see, you know, just the tradition all around there. It's not as prettily displayed as other stadiums, but there's no doubt that there's just a sense of, you know, things have been accomplished by this franchise. And even though DC United in the recent times has struggled and really survived mostly due to the mediocrity of MLS, It's still, you know, it's not the most pleasant place to play. And you're right, I think with the new stadium, some of that goes away. You're going to have a nicer locker rooms. You're going to be in, you know, nice walk up to the field, and the fans will still be there cheering as passionately as ever and still be as great of fans as ever. But there won't be that same sense of them, you know, jumping up and down right next to you as you're on the field, calling out to you as close and as intimately. So, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the team will be able to replicate some things and make it equally as intimidating. But, you know, there will still be that sense of something historic and something cool missing from the new stadium.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. But, Robert, I'll definitely talk to you throughout the year, of course. And, you know, this is it. It's time to say goodbye to the old girl and move into the new one.
Yeah, it'll be bittersweet, no doubt about that. But it'll be, I think, I can't wait to see what the team has planned throughout the year for kind of reminiscing. You know, I'll be there for the last home opener at RFK. I have my tickets already, and I need to secure my tickets for the final home game, regular season home game, and so you can see how the stadium goes out with the bang. But looking forward to seeing what the team has planned.
Absolutely, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen. So listen, Robert, I'll talk to you next time. Thank you again for coming on, and have a good evening, and talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, sir. Robert Hay joining me to talk about, of course, this is it, the final swan song of RFK Stadium. It should be exciting to watch. It should be exciting to see when you get to the end of October. And we will see if they do make the playoffs. Well, the jury's still out. But we'll see what happens when we get over there. Could not join me live, of course, Daryl Jones down in Jacksonville to talk about the Armada and their current situation, but we did record this interview, or I recorded this interview with him. Enjoy it, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, Daryl Jones down in Jacksonville to talk about the NASL's Armada and their current situation as the league will now operate the Armada as their owner has left the club. And here's Daryl Jones right now. Daniel Feuerstein here, the American Soccer Show, back in 2017 as we get set for another exciting season of American Soccer, whether it's in Major League Soccer, the NASL, or the USL. Joining me right now from the Full Mast podcast on everything the Jacksonville Armada in the NASL, it is Mr. Daryl Jones who joins me today. Daryl, how are you, and thanks for coming back on.
I'm doing well, Daniel. Thank you for having me again.
Oh, it's great to have you back on. Of course, we hope to have you back on when we preview the spring season. And, of course, things have changed ever since the, shall we say, no offense, batten down the hatches. Here it comes. The possibilities of the NASL folding thankfully did not happen. But obviously certain things have happened with the Jacksonville Armada, with the ownership group sadly no longer around. The league will now run the Armada as they see fit.
Right, and the league is in place as the owner, and meetings are going on with prospective new buyers, new owners, and also with the coach and the team on a somewhat regular basis to, you know, basically just go over the situation and how things are going to go moving forward. Obviously. League ownership isn't a new situation to fans of the league. It's happened a couple of times in the past. This situation obviously will be a little different. There are several new owners in the league, so and a few teams that have left the league. So we're looking at a different dynamic this time around. We have a different group that is assisting the league in its endeavors to move forward and grow. So it's a challenge, but it's something that it's our challenge, and we'll be looking forward to it going through the year.
Now, why did your former owner and CEO Mark Frisch decide to get out of the NASL? Why did he decide to just give up ownership of the club and get out of running the Armada? Was it financial? Was day-to-day operations finally getting to him? Did he lose the ability or the passion for the game in Jacksonville? What happened with Mark?
I, Well, obviously, I can't say exactly or specifically, but obviously, yeah, it was, you know, it was financial reasons. The cost of running the team, the organization at the levels it was being run, and again, you know, nothing I say is confirmed or considered 100% accurate, but it obviously did not fit into his business plans anymore, and it was time for him personally to get out. You know, I believe that many actions were taken over the last several months to try and save it, to try and, you know, find ways to make it work, and it just wasn't going to work. Mark was also the head of the board of governors for the league, so he had a big part in what was going on with the league as well. So he definitely hasn't lost the passion. He loves the game. I'm sure he still, you know, loves the team. It's just he had to take the L and step away.
Yeah, that's tough. And obviously Jacksonville, of course, playing most of their games in the minor league baseball stadium, of course, that historical first game in the history of Jacksonville Armada at the Everbank Field, home of the Jacksonville Jaguars, where you pounced on FC Edmonton, three consecutive goals before Edmonton finally bit the bagel to take away the clean sheet. But still, though, It looks like to me, obviously, a lot of passionate fans, of course, yourself one of them, being involved with this Jacksonville Armada side and hopefully, you know, get out of a rut if with a new direction, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and we're going to see, you know, obviously, so with the league owning the team now, and again, that's until an ownership group comes in, because the league is very high on Jacksonville as a city. They want the sport to succeed in Jacksonville, and they're going to find owners for this team. So, again, when that happens, anything I'm about to say will obviously change. But, you know, from now, obviously we'll have budget limitations that will affect squad size. So whereas last year we had 30, 33 players, this year we may be looking at 18 to 22. You know, you're going to be running on a much lower group of guys because you're just not going to have the expenses that you had previously. So it will be a limited squad, but from Coach Mark Lowry's mouth, the squad that's there is going to be a solid core of guys. And basically, let's say we have a squad of 18 guys, it's going to be a squad of 18 starters, as opposed to where you've got 30 guys and you've got guys that you bring through, you've got guys that, you know, you take a look at, whatever. This is, you know, the guys that are there are going to be everyday players and able to step in at any time. So I guess you'd say squad strength will actually be greater, even though the numbers will be lesser.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that one. How is Mark Lowry doing so far with all this setup? It must be new for him, having ownership changing from one man into now the league running the club. Does he have someone to talk to from the NESL who's going to be managing the day-to-day operation, of course, taking care of the financial situations for the players, for the coaches, for the training staff, the medical staff? How's he holding up so far? And, you know, this could be a grind if this continues past a year.
Well, he's fine. And, you know, as far as the players are concerned, as far as the fans are concerned, we won't see the league ownership. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. As far as noticing a difference in what's going on the field due to the league ownership. For us, it'll still be the Armada going out there. They're able to go get the players they want, obviously, with certain limitations, but they're going to have the guys there. Now, Mark's been with the team all along, so when in season one, Guillermo Hoyos was removed, Mark was part of the team with Eric Dade that took over for the rest of the season there. And then last season, he was Tony Miola's assistant and then took over for the rest of the season when Tony left. So Mark has been in it from day one. working with his team, working with the club, and it's not a situation of rebuilding. It's not an expansion team again. We were able to keep a handful of players around, so there was a small core. Part of that core being Kayvon George and Nicholas Maripu, who, you know, that's your defensive midfield there. And then at the back, Armada re-signed Meshack Jerome today, which is a huge re-signing, the Haiti international. So they've got a good core. They brought in a couple players earlier this week. Kalen Ryden has come in at the back. So and the players that were retained, most of them were up top. So rebuilding that back line and little by little getting there, but you know the plan is to be there. Roster's expected to be filled when training starts mid-February, and they're very positive. They have other signings to announce, just haven't announced them yet. So it's really in a good place. And as far as league interaction, it's open door. So there's no issue there. He's got contact with them. They've been in contact with him, meeting semi-regularly, so no issues.
So just to ask this question, will the Armada continue to use First Community Ballpark at the minor league baseball stadium, or they're going to be somewhere else for the future?
I would imagine 99% chance they're going to be somewhere else. That is one thing, obviously, turning Community First from a baseball field to a soccer pitch was very costly. And obviously, that being a massive cost, that and a lot of the promotional things, those kind of things are going to go away. So I would expect them to be somewhere else. Reports of a deal have come out, but they are, after talking to him today, nothing is official yet. So they are still looking at two or three places. And so when that decision is made, we'll know for sure where we're playing. But again, wherever it is, you're talking about UNF or Jacksonville University as options. And so you're walking to a facility that's ready to play. It's not like you're going to a park and you've got to go hire some stands and whatever. So, you know, the facility will be ready for the Armada to come to it. So that's, again, that's a fan thing more than a player and a coach and a team thing. I'm sure they'll play anywhere they can, but the facilities will be there for them to be successful.
And for yourself personally, how has the last couple of months been for you? Obviously, Cosmos win the Soccer Bowl championship again, and then right away, the Tampa Bay Rowdies, Ottawa Fury, they jump ship for the USL. We already knew about Minnesota United. They're in Major League Soccer. And then all of a sudden, you have a very, very worried moment where the NASL is in deep trouble and there might not be another league season in 2017, even though it's been saved. Yourself personally, how did you feel about the whole situation when it broke out like that?
To, I guess, sort of all fall apart, and I guess that's the nature of one of the deals with the American game is the fact that teams, franchises, whatever you want to call them, can go anywhere for the right amount of money. You know, you can pay up to leave the league you're in and pay in to get into another league. It definitely makes off-season very interesting. As it all started to unfold, I will admit, I just threw my hands up in the air and basically just said, you know what, nothing I can do about this. I just sit back and watch and hope there was a team in Jacksonville come spring to get involved with and to support. And lo and behold, here we are. We've got an opportunity, so we'll be there.
And how's it going to feel like going to the West Coast to take on the San Francisco Delta squad where, you know, yourself and majority of the clubs are like along the East Coast, obviously, the Eastern time zone, except for maybe, actually, Indianapolis is still in the Eastern time zone, so there's really no one central anymore, no more Oklahoma City. It's all basically, technically you got Mountain time zone with FC Edmonton, but you're going all the way across the country now.
I'm sure there will be a handful of people that make that trip. trip. I will say that our trip to Puerto Rico last year was without a doubt our favorite trip. The away trips for me have basically been me ticking boxes for places I hadn't been, so going to New York was different. San Francisco I've been to a few times, so I'm really not that concerned because more than anything, the cost of traveling out there will likely prevent that from happening. It's where we as American soccer fans are. It's a massive country. It's for all intents and purposes the size of Europe. You know, so if you're talking about a team from Germany having to travel to Gibraltar to play somebody every fifth week, it's an interesting dynamic, and that's one where we hope games will be on television, because as a fan, it's a little prohibitive, and that's one thing that I guess in a way holds the leagues back from popularity, is the fact that just trying to find your team and where they are at any given moment, can be difficult. If it's on television, fantastic. If it's not, you're trying to catch a radio broadcast. So that's one thing that's different. Hopefully with Miami, we've always traveled well to Miami and Carolina and, formerly Tampa and Fort Lauderdale and Atlanta. So the close games will still get local crowds, but outside of that, you'll have just a handful here and there.
Yep, I hear what you're saying. Daryl, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it, and I will talk to you again during the preview show for the spring season. Thanks again.
Thanks very much.
And joining me right now from Metro Soccer News, it's my good friend Matthew Klimberg, as we discuss, of course, the strangeness of the Dax McCarty deal. Matthew, welcome back. How you doing, my friend? And Happy New Year to you, sir.
Happy New Year to you as well. Appreciate that you had me on.
No problem. Glad to have you on. So I think it's not strangely enough that you were probably bewildered, just as I was, that out of the blue, Dax McCarty gets traded to the Chicago Fire for basically $400,000 of targeted allocation money, $200,000 this year, $200,000 next year for these 2 years. And obviously, the obvious thing to, solution to come up is that they feel Sean Davis is ready. In your mind, did you think this was coming? Or did you think maybe they probably should have waited till they got to the summer window?
I honestly saw this coming. I didn't think it was coming, but I saw it as a possibility, especially after the rumors of last winter. If you remember, he was rumored to be on the chopping block before he signed an extension. They have one area that they have a ton of depth is in the midfield, and they clearly feel that Sean Davis is ready. He's been described as being the next Red Bulls captain. You and I have spoken to him. He is as poised as they come. He is very smart, and he's also pretty darn talented too. So they clearly felt that, they could sell Dax McCarty at the apex of his value, because he's approaching 30 years old, and soccer players on the other side of 30 tend not to fare as well as the side in the 20s. So they wanted to get what they could. And then also keep in mind, he suffered some pretty serious injuries last year, and he missed quite a bit of time, which allowed Sean Davis to shine and maybe had Red Bulls thinking about the future. I don't know about you, but I happen to agree with this move. If I'm the Red Bulls and their long-term plan.
Not disagreeing with you about that. I think sooner or later he was going to get dealt. Personally, I felt that maybe like what happened with Lloyd Sam last season, he was dealt in the middle of the summer, more July, August, to in that deal to DC United for, I believe it was targeted allocation money or some form of financial bring back in the deal. I thought that was going to happen this upcoming summer. I thought this upcoming summer Dax was going to get dealt to another club. I just didn't expect it to come this quickly. But I do understand where you're coming from, and I, in a certain way, I do agree with you that, you know, he was on the chopping block and he was going to be dealt, whether it was going to be this early in the preseason or later on in the season, because I think we can both agree that Sean Davis is the heir apparent future, which apparently he is now. And Sean Davis, you've seen him, I've seen him. To me, it looks like, you know, we're going to see what he's made of for a full season instead of just a couple of games as a fill-in.
Well, I happen to think that this was the perfect time to deal Dax McCarty, because now Sean Davis goes into training camp with the first team and will be the guy, and he will learn to play with the players that Dax did, and they'll learn to play with him. So a drastic move like this in the middle of the season, I think, may have interrupted whatever success the Red Bulls may have been having or may have at that time. And this gives them time to iron out the kinks. And also with Lloyd Sam, that was a bit of a different situation because, you know, there are unverified reports that he was dealt after the 2-0 Red Bulls lost to NYCFC because Jesse Marsh called him out in the locker room following the match, and Lloyd had something to say, and the next day he was dealt. So I think there are very different situations. I think that this was a move that went along with the long-term plan for the organization, whereas the Lloyd Sam one was kind of materialized very quickly.
Yep. I can understand where that's coming from. And, you know, we'll have to see. And, you know, like you probably have said, you know, this is the best time to make this type of a deal. And, you know, why not? Got to give Sean Davis all the time now in training camp right now. Red Bulls just started the training camp sessions. They're already on their way to Arizona for one of the two Diamond Desert Cup tournaments out there before they get ready for the big matchup against the Vancouver Whitecaps in the CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals. That's going to be the end of February on the 22nd, Wednesday night at Red Bull Arena. Everybody go there.
That's the only thing that that has me questioning the timing, because the Red Bulls have never made it this far in the Champions League before, and to lose the heart and soul of the team right before you play the biggest international tournament match of your team's 22-year history, you know, it's a curious timing. But I guess they felt that, you know, by the time, like, I guess they felt this was the right time to do it, even if it jeopardized their immediate future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, I mean, that's my only reasoning as well, to be honest, Matthew, because, you know, the quarterfinals are almost upon us. We have at least, today's the 23rd, we've already at least a month away from the start of the Red Bull season, and that starts in the CONCACAF Champions League in the quarterfinals. So we'll have to wait and see what happens when we get there, and we will get there. Obviously, I know you will be there, I will be there. It's going to be a very exciting time. I've never seen the Red Bulls advance this deep in a knockout stage outside of the Open Cup to get into international club soccer and hopefully maybe getting into the FIFA Club World Cup. So we'll see what happens. But let's move on a little bit from the Dax situation. What is going on with Ali Curtis and Jesse Marsh and Red Bulls Global Soccer? Apparently, we know Marsh is not going to stay at Salzburg, whatever the rumors were. Now Ali Curtis is no longer, or shall I say temporarily, not with the club, and we have not seen him, no hide or hair of him, even though he's bald. But what do you think is going on? I mean, is Ali Curtis leaving?
So as far as Jesse Marsh is concerned, he's back with the team. He was with the team in at Red Bull Arena today in their first training camp practice, and now he's with them on the way to Arizona. So that matter's settled. No one's really quite sure what happened there. It sounded like there was quite a bit of smoke, which usually indicates a fire, but came out that he wasn't staying in Salzburg. As far as Ellie Curtis goes, the only people that know are the Red Bull ownership and Mark the Grand Prix. No one else I've spoken to with the team or around the team really has a definitive clue as to what's going on. But I will say this. The Red Bulls announced two roster moves today, and coupled with the Dax McCarty move, during those three press releases, Ellie Curtis was not mentioned in any of them. That is unusual, to say the least, because he's been mentioned in every other transaction he's been involved in. He was not part of the draft. Apparently, he was not on the second on the phone call for the second day of drafting. So there are lots of questions, and no one really has an answer, or the ones that do aren't sharing it. It's unclear, especially considering how much success Ellie Curtis has had in only 2 years, a supporter shield and an Easter Conference regular season championship, as well as a quarterfinal berth in the CONCACAF Champions League. This is a team that he has presided over, and he's made quite a few role-playing additions, not the least of which is Sasha Kljestan, to get them this far. So your guess is as good as mine, Daniel.
Yeah, that's true, and we'll see when Ali resurfaces. Hopefully, when they come back from the first half of the spring training section over in Arizona, when they come back to the training facility, when they come back to Harrison to Red Bull Arena, and hopefully Ali Curtis will give us an update of what's been going on, and hopefully doesn't mind a couple questions.
I have a feeling that Ali Curtis won't be. Given us many updates, to be honest with you.
Right. I agree with you there as well. But I know you and your partner over at Metro Soccer website, you guys are Metro Soccer Nation. How's it going for the site so far? Any new details, any new writers are joining you and your partner out over there?
So my good friend, Michael Schwartz, he has departed. He departed, and he took a job that outside of the soccer world that he is absolutely in love with, and I honestly couldn't be more thrilled for him. You know Michael as well. He is a super guy, incredibly smart, very nice, and just a genuinely good person. And you know, the job he found outside of soccer, I'm not going to share it because I don't know whether he wants people to know, but it involves helping people, which shouldn't surprise anyone. And he has fallen head over heels for it. And, I couldn't be happier for him.
So he's starting his own, he's going to help old ladies cross the street business?
Something like that, but not quite. He'll be helping people. Yeah, no, of course. He'll be making people's lives better, and I'm very happy for him. As far as writers go, we have returning Leo Rodriguez, who is a very talented contributor for both Red Bulls and NYCFC. We also are going to probably have some contributions from Matt Reed, who originally founded the site. He's going to get more involved this year. And I'm very excited because we're planning to hire a new writer who I know is a friend of mine. He's a friend of mine. I know his family. And he is a gigantic soccer fan, a very good writer, and he has his own podcast. I am not prepared to, say who it is yet because it's not finalized, but it will be soon. At least you'll find out more about my ace in the hole before you find out about Ellie Curtis. Put it that way.
That's right. We'll probably find out about your new writer before the Ellie Curtis rumors will soon be dead, and hopefully he'll be walking around somewhere. I don't know where. But Matthew, thank you very much. Have a good evening, sir. Thank you for coming on, and I will definitely see you. We'll stay in touch, obviously, but
of course, I will
see you at Red Bull Arena in February 22nd.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as well. And that is my good friend Matthew Klimberg of Metro Soccer Nation, as we discussed the Dax McCarty situation. Does it sound like it could be the right time that Dax gets dealt and you see Sean Davis getting an opportunity? We'll just have to wait and see. But let me just say this, and that is, of course, just a lot of fun things going on in American soccer right now. There are some great moves. There's some heart-wrenching moves, obviously. But one thing is for sure, and that is this, and that is it never gets dull anymore around this time. It doesn't get dull at all when you talk about when you talk about the things that are happening inside American soccer. And I really hope you're enjoying everything that I bring on this show. And once again, we're very soon going to get started with the MLS season preview shows. Of course, more clubs are rumored to be coming over after LAFC. It should be exciting to watch to see what's going to happen. I'm excited about Atlanta United coming in. I'm excited about Minnesota United FC coming in. And let's hope everything is going to go as well as planned. And we'll see what this Red Bull season is going to be now that a major part of the puzzle has been changed. And we'll see what Sean Davis can do for a full season. Got to give him an opportunity. Got to give him an opportunity to see what he can do for the Red Bulls. But once again, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get ready soon. This coming Sunday, the United States will get underway for their 2017 calendar year. Bruce Arena will be getting ready for Serbia at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego, California, as we will see what the men's national team is going to do with the brand new situation, and that is the second leg of the Bruce Arena era. We'll see what happens, and obviously, it's going to be a lot of fun. And then don't forget, later on, next Friday, the United States will play their second friendly against Jamaica down at Finley Stadium in Chattanooga, Tennessee, down the Chattanooga choo-choo. Chattanooga FC will be hosting this friendly, and it should be a lot of fun. And thank you, everyone, for listening again today. And I'm glad everyone's got an opportunity to take a listen and see what's going to happen. I want to thank my guests tonight, Guillermo Rivera, Fire Confidential, covering the Chicago Fire for ChicagoNow.com. I also want to thank Robert Hay. I also want to thank Daryl Jones from the Full Mass Podcast. And, of course, Matthew Klimberg on some interesting discussions about the whole Lloyd Sam thing, which I did not know, but hey, that's why some people are doing the digging. We'll see what happens there. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Join me this coming Sunday for the post-match show between the United States and Serbia. And of course, join me next Monday, Feuerstein's Fire, American Soccer Show. We'll continue to discuss what's been going on with the game in these United States of America. My name, once again, is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please, I beg of you to enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.